Case number 13-7063 et al. Tanya Edwards et al. Appellants v. District of Columbia. Mr. McNamara for the appellants, Ms. Wilson for the appellee.
Let's wait till the courtroom. Let's wait till the courtroom clears.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. McNamara, good morning.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Robert McNamara here representing the appellants Tanya Edwards and Bill Main. The district court in this case, Your Honor, should be reversed for two reasons. First, because the District of Columbia's tour guide regulations are a content-based restriction on speech that's subject to strict scrutiny. But second, because under any standard of First Amendment review, the district court erred in upholding these regulations based on nothing more than the government's bare assertion that making tour guides take a multiple-choice history test accomplishes something worthwhile. Turning first to the content-based question, we know these are regulations of speech for three reasons. One, on their face, they single out...
I'd like to interrupt you because I want you to be very precise in what regulation you say is content-based. What provision?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The definition of tour guide, Your Honor, makes clear that a tour guide, someone who needs a license, is someone who either engages in the business of guiding or directing people to any place or point of interest in the district, or who, in connection with any sightseeing trip or tour, describes, explains, or lectures concerning any place or point of interest in the district
okay.
to any person.
So we're at section
1200.1, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay, and the way that the district court described this section is he said there's a clause 1 and a clause 2. Clause 1 is everything before the or, who, and clause 2 is everything afterwards. Clause 1, are you contending that that is content-based?
I think that's still content-based, Your Honor, because if you look at the practical operation of the regulations, they only make sense as a restriction on speech rather than a restriction on the physical practice of escorting. Examined as a regulation of the practice of escorting, these regulations are both under-inclusive and over-inclusive. They're under-inclusive because it's perfectly legal to escort people around the District of Columbia without first passing a multiple-choice history test. Taxi drivers do this.
But that's not the way that the regulation is written. That's not the text. The text says that if you drive people around, guiding them or directing them, whether you're saying anything or not, you're a tour guide. And that's what the text says. You're asking us to interpret the text in some other way than its plain meaning, aren't you?
Well, Your Honor, I'm asking you to interpret the text in the way the district interpreted it in its own 30B6 testimony. The district made clear that the justification for a tour guide license is present only when people are able to answer questions on particular topics. And the district said that people who need a tour guide license in the District of Columbia are people who are able to, quote, communicate with others regarding a certain list of topics.
But the 30B6 deponent can bind the company or the entity that it is representing as to facts, not as to legal conclusions.
Well, Your Honor, I think that we're binding the government to the government's interpretation of these regulations. As enforced, as understood by the government, they operate as a restriction on speech, and the burdens imposed go to speech. The burdens imposed are passing a multiple-choice history test and a requirement of fluency in English, things that go to communication rather than to the conduct of safely
escorting. They also include things like, you know, not being a felon and being over 18 and other things of that nature.
Sure, Your Honor, but in any First Amendment case, the government's burden is to actually demonstrate that the specific burdens it's imposing on speech are justified. Under any standard of First Amendment review, the government has to show, one, that it's addressing a real problem, an actual danger to public health, safety, or welfare, and two, that it's doing so in a reasonably tailored way, that it's not burdening more speech than is necessary. And here, particularly in light of the multiple choice test requirement, the record is completely lacking on that front. There's no evidence that untested tour guides present any kind of danger to the public. Indeed, the record shows that in most jurisdictions in the country, it's perfectly legal for tour guides to ply their trade without passing a multiple choice history test. And as far as the record reflects, no one's ever been harmed by that. But second, the tour guide regulations restrict far more speech than is necessary because they actually silence guides who have not taken and passed a multiple choice history test. If the district is actually concerned that naive tourists are falling in with untested and untrustworthy tour guides, it's perfectly free to restrict, for example, the solicitation of tour guides, restrict their commercial speech, and make it illegal to hold oneself out as a registered DC tour guide without first passing a test and meeting any other requirements the district wants to set forth. That allows the district to address the purported naive tourist problem without actually silencing people who refuse to spend hours studying for a test on topics about which they don't want to talk so that they can address...
They're not silenced. They can do this gratis as the Eastern District of Louisiana recently held.
They can speak for free, Your Honor, but the Supreme Court has consistently held that the fact that someone is paid for their speech does not change the level of First Amendment protection that speech is accorded. And I think that has to be true. Whether a Bible is handed out for free or whether a Bible is sold, the Bible remains core First Amendment speech.
All right, but we're also supposed to consider whether there are alternative means of communication. There is. They can do this gratis.
They can do this for free, Your Honor, but they can't actually pay themselves for their time in doing this. And there's evidence that this is not only burdening the appellants, this is burdening ordinary people in Washington, D.C. There's a declaration in the record from a woman named Megan Buskey, who's a former Fulbright scholar who would be giving tours of Washington, D.C. and sharing her extensive knowledge of local history, but for the fact that she would have to pass an extensive multiple-choice examination before she's allowed to receive any compensation for her time in so doing. And she has chosen silence rather than studying a host of topics that she does not want to talk about in order to...
Let me ask you about this content-based. I think that Judge Tatel's description of what is content-neutral in the NRC case from 96, that it's content-neutral so long as it's justified without reference to the content of the regulated speech. And you may have this being content-defined, but it is justified by considerations other than the content of the speech. Number one, they're free to say whatever they want to say once they're licensed. And number two, the justification comes, as again the Eastern District points out, not only protecting the tourism industry, but protecting, and I guess that is part of the tourism industry, protecting someone from just a panhandler saying, let me give you a tour of D.C. And this was all in the district court's order from there. So why isn't this content defined but not content based? Because once they're licensed, as I say, they can say whatever they want.
Three responses, Your Honor. First, I don't agree that this law is justified without reference to content. When we asked at deposition when the justification for tour guide licensing was present, the district was unequivocal that it's only present when people are able to answer questions on particular topics. And indeed, the district's own brief at page 18 confirms that what they're trying to do is protect the consumer experience of tourists, to protect what they're hearing. And I think here we're exactly on all fours with the Supreme Court's decision in Watchtower. In Watchtower, canvassers were free to say whatever they wanted. They could canvass for the Jehovah's Witnesses, they could canvass for the Democratic Party, but they could only do so once they had registered with the government. And in Watchtower, as in here, the government said, what we're really worried about is conduct. We're worried about walking from door to door, and those people might be criminals. They might be dangerous. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, you don't have any evidence that canvassers are a particular source of crime problem, that they're more likely to be dangerous than anyone else, and therefore this registration requirement fails the First Amendment. That's exactly the same argument as here. Now, as to content-defined categories of people, that's a phrase that comes from the Supreme Court's secondary effects cases. If the government wants to zone adult bookstores out of the downtown area based on the secondary effects of the speech, it's allowed to do so. But there are two things that make the secondary effects cases inapplicable here, Your Honor. First, the secondary effects cases are effects on people other than the audience. Here the government's trying to protect the audience's consumer experience, and there's no case law supporting the idea that the government can regulate adult bookstores for the purpose of improving the experience of adult bookstore consumers. But second, when regulating secondary effects, and this is Justice Kennedy's concurrence in Alameda Books, the government can't reduce the total quantity of speech. The government here isn't saying untested tour guides have secondary effects and so can only go in certain areas of town. It's saying untested tour guides have certain effects on their audiences, and therefore they cannot guide tours at all. Therefore, they cannot lecture to tour groups, even if someone else is doing physical escorting. That's not a secondary effects case. That's a primary effects case, Your Honor.
Can I ask you, what is the remedy that SEGS in the city is seeking? Is the problem just the examination? You want to get rid of that, or is it the regulatory scheme as a whole?
The examination is certainly the primary burden that's imposed. There's no objection to, and I see I'm into my rebuttal time, but we have no objection to general business regulation, Your Honor. The primary burden, the thing that's, for example, silencing Megan Buskey, is the exam. But it's also the content-based problem stems from how the regulations are framed. As Judge Wilkins pointed out, there are two parts to the definition of tour guide, one of which explicitly makes it illegal to talk about certain topics to a tour group without first obtaining a license, even if someone else is doing all the physical escorting and making sure they're going to the right places. That regulation, the treatment of tour bus drivers who are required to have a license if and only if they talk to the people who are riding on their bus.
You don't have a tour bus driver who's a plaintiff, and neither one of your clients, neither one of the plaintiffs says that they ever ride along with a licensed tour guide and want to also, pipe in. In other words, you're identifying harms that do not apply to your facts. I've read the declarations, two sets of declarations of both of the plaintiffs, and the statements of undisputed material facts in your summary judgment briefs below. You never assert that Ms. Edwards or Mr. Main wish to or ever ride their Segways along with a licensed tour guide, but are silenced from speaking. You say that it doesn't work that way. One tour guide guides the group. So why should we even reach that? Why should we even reach, I guess, Clause 2 of 1200.1, given that it doesn't apply to your clients?
Well, they don't do that, Your Honor, because it's a crime. They don't do that because they can actually be imprisoned for riding along behind their groups and lecturing to them. They do now, after the district court denied a preliminary injunction in this case, actually employ licensed tour guides.
That's not in the record. What you just said to me is nowhere in the record. There's no facts. I mean, it's you saying it, but it's not in the record at all.
That's true, Your Honor, but they do only at the summary judgment stage did they begin to employ licensed tour guides. Prior to that point, their entire business was unlicensed, so this wasn't an option for them up until the time of summary judgment. And it is something that is certainly criminalized, and the district court found that the fact that they have gone out and helped their part-time guides get licenses demonstrates that they are reasonably chilled by these regulations. That I'll reserve the balance of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Wilson.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it please the court, I'm Mary Wilson representing the District of Columbia. The district court got it right in this case. The district's tour guide licensing scheme is content neutral and passes intermediate scrutiny. It does not dictate or control what any tour guide can say when he or she charges a fee to escort visitors or tourists around the district. The regulatory scheme merely determines who is qualified to be a professional guide. They can take a tour for free. They can stand in front of the White House and charge to describe the White House, but they cannot charge a fee to guide and direct a group around town. This case is like the...
So I want to make sure that I understand what you're saying. You're saying that SEGS in the city could, without being licensed, lecture at a single point. So if they just stood in front of the White House and said, "You know, I can give you much more detailed information about this structure and it'll only cost you $5," and they could do that.
Yes, we would submit that's not guiding or directing people around the district. Yes, they can stand and talk or they can guide and direct for free. But
okay. So what if they conducted tours and took people to different sites, but then just handed out a pamphlet that described the point of interest?
Well, again, there's no facts in this case that they do that, but I think that would come within the guiding or directing to any place or point of interest. That certainly comes within the clause one. They guide the, or direct the people to that point. And then they can, once they get there, they can say or not say or pass out or not pass out any information they want.
So how, I guess then what I don't understand is the tour bus drivers who can take people from place to place, and they have a recording that describes the points of interest, and they don't have to be licensed. So how is that reconciled?
Well, as the district court noted in its opinion, the bus drivers are licensed. They are licensed, but they're not.
They're not licensed as tour guides.
Yes, but I think it's reasonable that that if there is a tour guide on the bus, that is another way the District of Columbia wants to protect the tourism trade, that a tour guide on the bus, even if somebody else is driving the bus, that, you know, can still be unscrupulous or commit fraud, the concerns that the district has about other tour guides. And even though they are together, the bus driver and the tour guide, on the bus going to these points of interest, it still comes within the...
Right, but I'm not talking about where you have... I agree if someone is on the bus and they are describing these points of interest, then they have to be a licensed tour guide. But it is okay, right, if they simply have a bus driver who is a licensed bus driver and he has a tape recording that he turns on at different points. And he doesn't have to be licensed as a tour guide.
Yes, he is licensed. There is a separate licensing for just the bus driver. And that, too, is geared towards consumer protection. They have to know their way around and know the area. But if there is a live person on the bus providing the information, then you have an opportunity for these unscrupulous activities, charge more to take the people back, leave them stranded
where they are.
But you don't have that with the recording.
Why can't you regulate that? I mean, okay, everything that you have described is something that you could regulate through some alternative process about solicitation or fraud or, you know, one is registered, one is not registered. Why does it have to be an exam if the exam actually has nothing to do with it? I mean, what I find really interesting about this is you require them to take this exam, to take the time to study all of this stuff, but then you say, well, it doesn't matter what they actually say.
Well, I think the district has an interest in professional licensing of professions and trades to assure that these people who are charging money and holding themselves out have some minimal competency in what they're doing. And after they establish that minimal competency, they can say or not say whatever they want. The district doesn't police them. The district doesn't monitor what they say. In this regard, I would say...
But so I guess what I'm asking, I still haven't heard the answer to it, is how does that serve the purpose, you know, that you're trying to meet? In other words, if the idea is to protect them, but once they're out there, you don't care what they say.
This case is like the Ninth Circuit's decision in the mental health licensing case, where there, the state of California licensed mental health professionals, psychologists, therapists, and they had a competency test. They had a test that questioned them on some types of therapeutic theory, not all. And the therapist sued and said, this is a top, you know, this therapy necessarily involves talk and speech, and we shouldn't have to do this test to then be able to talk to our patients. And the Ninth Circuit rejected that and said they could still say whatever they wanted, but the test sort of assured some minimal competency in what they were doing to protect the consumers.
But
and the government
don't
had an interest in that.
Don't you think that's more like lawyers, for instance? That, you know, you can have professional competency exams where the client has to trust in your knowledge, and their affairs, you know, and how that turns out depends on your knowledge. But that's not the case with a tour guide, is it?
Well, it is like lawyers in that a lawyer can say anything they want if they don't charge a fee. But here, I mean, lawyers don't generally escort you around town to far-flung locations, where they might abandon you or not bring you back. I mean, the district does have an interest, and it's undisputed.
But how
in protecting
how does being able to pass an exam about points of historical interest have any relationship to whether or not you're going to treat people carefully, take care of them, not abandon them?
The district legislature and an executive have made this determination. They want to protect the tourism trade. This is the method dating back to 1932. They have chosen to regulate and assure that there's some
but
minimal...
But don't they have to show that the method actually achieves the result?
I mean, they have to show the method that is related to the result, and here it is related to the result. These questions go to where monuments are, to the address of where they're going, to their knowledge of the District of Columbia, and if they say, I am a tour guide, professional tour guide, the district has an interest in assuring that they have some professionalism in that, and that they will not, that they are who they say they are, that they are who they say they are. We are assuring that they are.
The follow-up to Judge Brown's, one of her earlier questions about the buses, the regulatory scheme says that the bus driver, even if it's a tour bus, doesn't have to have a tour guide license if he or she plays a recording, right?
Yes.
But there's no qualifications with respect to the recording. So the tour bus driver could find a drunk off the street and say, let's make a recording of what you know about D.C., and then play that recording as he drives people around and charges them $50 a head, and that wouldn't violate the regulation, right?
Right.
So how does that support any governmental interest?
Again, if you have a live person lecturing them and on this tour, escorting them around the district, charging them money, taking them to far-flung spots, the district has made the judgment call that based on the quality of the consumer experience, we are not regulating what the speech is.
But I thought that you said that you know, they had to be licensed if they were directing and guiding.
Yes.
Right? But not if they drive them around in a bus. So let's say that SEGS and the city just pre-recorded audio tours like the tour buses. And what if Tanya Edwards recorded this herself, but she doesn't speak? So they are taken around to different spots in the city, and then the leader just turns on the pre-recorded tape. Well, that would be okay?
That would be okay under Clause 1. There is a difference, as the Court has pointed out, under Clause 1 and Clause 2. Clause 1 does not reference any speech or describing, explaining, lecturing, either live or recorded. It's merely guiding or directing people to any place or point of interest. So, and once you do that, you can say anything, play a recording or not play a recording. Clause 1 would cover that. Clause 2, we submit the Court does not have to reach Clause 2 because the plaintiff's actions are covered by Clause 1.
You've just given, I think, for the first time, a whole new interpretation of Clause 1. You've said that if the Segway operators don't say anything during the tour, then they don't have to get a tour guide license. Because they wouldn't fall under Clause 2, and Clause 1 only applies if you say something. So that's now how you're saying that we should interpret Clause 1?
The regs are, you have to define tour guide by what they do. A tour guide goes around to guides and directs to places or points of interest. So the first clause does not encompass, define a tour guide based on any reference to their speech or the content of their speech. It does not limit their speech or have any reference to the content of their speech. I mean, if like a taxi driver just escorts, sorry, I'm struggling with this. I think a tour guide does go and just to places or points of interest, but if they did, I do know what your question is. If they don't say anything, I mean, that's more like a taxi driver. I think you have to say the tour guide does hold themselves
out. Yes or no, a Segway tour operator who doesn't say anything and plays a recording, as Judge Brown asked you, needs a tour guide license, yes or no?
I mean, it is more akin to the bus situation, in which case, yes, then Clause 2 does kick it. So under Clause 2, I think Clause 2 would apply there, Your Honor, if the Segway, if they go around on the Segway and don't and explain, lecture, or concern any place or point of interest, even recorded, then yes, under Clause 2, they would need the license.
They would need a license because
they are providing a description or explaining or lecturing, even if it's pre-recorded.
Okay, because Ms. Edwards did it, or what if instead of her narrating it, she gets a drunk off the street and makes the recording and plays that? She's not saying anything. She's just playing a recording. She need a license?
I think I can't. I'm unwilling to concede that without thinking it through, Your Honor.
Okay. She rides the tour, and she's got, you know, Michelin's Guide to Washington, D.C., and when she gets to, Ms. Edwards gets to whatever the landmark is, she just reads verbatim from that guide without any other commentary, and that's all she does. She need a license? Tour guide license?
Yes. If the court has no other questions, we would urge the court to affirm.
Thank you. Does he have any time? Why don't you take a minute?
Only 2 points in rebuttal, Your Honor. First, this is, under whatever standard, not a rational basis case. The government has an affirmative burden, and all of the government's concerns here are not only hypothetical, but they at most go to holding oneself out, to the need to regulate who can call themselves a tour guide, which is not what the regulations themselves regulate. And second, this is a challenge to the tour guide regulations, both on their face and as applied to Sags and the City's particular business model, which means the regulations as a whole are relevant to whether they're a regulation of speech, a regulation of conduct, or whether they survive First Amendment scrutiny. If there are no further questions from the panel, we'll rest on our briefs.
All right. Thank you,
Your Honor.
Thank you.